this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye, and we have a season opener edition, two games in, and we're living the dream. I'm here with Tim Gallagher, basketball historian. How you doing, brother?
Fred, I'm doing well. It's been way, way too long. I've missed talking with you. I've certainly been keeping up on everything, and excited that the season started, and excited about what I'm seeing so far. And you can lead the questioning, but just tonight, I've been very high on Coby White from the beginning.
Yes.
From the moment I saw him play at North Carolina, and as we've talked about in the past, I've been watching basketball for over 50 years now, and every once in a while I'll be flipping around and watching a game, watching a team, and I had no invested interest in Coby White as a freshman at North Carolina. I kind of knew his name, knew he was a top recruit, but watching them play, it's like, wait a minute, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Right? And obviously, he's got a unique look with his afro, kind of blowing in the wind like Dr. J used to have it sometimes. But, just his speed and explosiveness and speed with the ball in particular. When I see a guy's outrunning everybody on the dribble, against some elite athletes, that really catches my eye. So when we were doing our pre-draft discussions, that was a name that I was praying would slip to the full spot. And
you were 100% right on that one. I gotta tell you, Tim, one of the smartest basketball minds I've ever met. I love talking to you. We've had many incredible discussions. You're just an encyclopedia of knowledge on basketball, and I usually think I'm always or most often right on scouting players that I watch. And I wasn't blown away watching his college games. Maybe it was the games I watched. I watched the Auburn playoff game, and I wasn't, blown away. I mean, it was clear the one facet of his game that really just hit you in the face was the speed. He played at a much faster pace than anybody else on the court. But I didn't think he shot it exceptionally well in the games I saw. I had questions about that, because the shooting is so important in today's league. But this kid, I just can't believe how good he's become in such a short time. And he's doing things I didn't expect. I did not expect to shoot the ball this well. I did not expect him to take it to the hoop with reckless abandon and finish that well. And his defense, to me, his defensive IQ is so much higher than what you usually see for a player of his age. Like I was talking about today, you see young players consistently fall for shot fakes. He doesn't fall for shot fakes. He's an excellent defender. I've been really impressed with his defense so far. What say you?
Well, I agree with all of that. And, I think a lot of it with defense, it's interesting how a lot of players are criticized for their defense. And I think a lot of it is just effort. And obviously you have to have some IQ as well in terms of spacing. But, players are so talented that, there's very few guys, that are in a class like a Kawhi Leonard or something that can lock a guy down, right? It's really almost impossible, right? Where especially in today's game, right? Where, the Euro step and, moving screens and things that help free guys up. It's very difficult to really assess in some cases. So as long as a guy is given the effort and, a couple things with Coby White, I think the energy's there, right? So, and I think even though he was just at Carolina briefly, when you play for a guy like Roy Williams, you're accountable, right? It's not a culture of privilege there, even though he recruits elite guys. There'll be guys that have to pay their dues. I mean, not like the old days under Dean Smith where it was extreme in that way, but even now, guys have to earn their way at a place like Carolina. And so even though Coby was there just a year, I think that foundation definitely helped. And I sent you that little clip. I get that Blue Ribbon Yearbook every year. I've been getting it since it came out, and that's kind of my college hoops Bible. But they also then review teams and the players that have left the program for, either graduation or onto the NBA. And I sent that to you, and I thought it was really insightful that Roy Williams knew after about two practices that he told his assistants, we're going to need to recruit a point guard for next year because this kid's not going to, he's too good to stay in college another year. Like Roy knew,
knew immediately he was going to go to the pros.
Knew that quickly, well, right? I had not heard that until, I just got the yearbook, but I know from talking to some Bulls sources that that was one of the things that Roy shared with them, as they were evaluating players in the draft and Kobe in particular.
Yes.
But so his fearlessness, his energy, his speed, and I just, and I like the way he's able to improvise. I texted you that behind the back left-handed pass.
Oh, done. Incredible.
Just that, that was in him, right? That was the ability to improvise and make a play like that is just, to me, so cool to see, right?
Well, he took over. He had 30 minutes. He had 25 points tonight, 4 for 8 from 3. So he's shooting 50% from 3, 10 of 16 overall. He was a plus 15. That game changed. The Bulls were on their way for another disappointing loss. Their defense was horrific in the first half. Anytime Wendell Carter Jr. was off the floor, it was a complete nightmare defensively. But I thought initially Morant got wherever he wanted. He got wherever he wanted on that court. It was a disaster. They tried to put Ryan A on him. It was a complete disaster. He blew by him several times. The game shifted when they brought in Dunn and White and Thad Young and Wendell Carter Jr. in one stretch. Those four are so good defensively. They played so well defensively, forced a number of turnovers, and White just brought on the offensive end. But hats off to Chris Dunn because he had Morant one-on-one several times, and Morant could do nothing, absolutely nothing against Dunn in the third and fourth quarter. He just absolutely shut him down. It was one of the more impressive defensive performances I've seen from a Bulls player on a player of that skill level and speed level. What say you?
Well, I agree, and I've got to tip my cap to Chris Dunn for accepting the role that he has right now,
yes.
Right? Because he's been a starter in the NBA, and so I'm sure how he's been used in the rotation, kind of leading up to now, is probably not what he dreamt of at this stage of his career. But, I think the four guards that are in the Bulls rotation right now, and I texted you also that I think that Archie and Cornette should not be playing
ever
again in the fourth quarter of meaningful fourth quarter minutes the rest of the season. I mean, unless, hopefully there's not injuries or something that would require that. But I just think they have the depth and talent, especially when somebody like Hutchinson comes back as well.
Totally agree.
There should be no reason those guys should be in the game in the fourth quarter.
Arch is a great story. I know everybody loves him. He's a really good kid. It's impossible not to like him. He's got too many physical limitations. He's not long. He's too small. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And he's been absolutely embarrassed several times on the court. Tonight was a disaster. I mean, he was just, overmatched. One of the few guys on the team went a negative plus minus. He was 0-for-1 from the field. He just didn't bring anything. Although I can tolerate him because he plays as hard as possible. I don't want to see Cornette anymore. I know it's only two games. I know people are rolling their eyes. He's not a good defender. And when this team is struggling like they are defensively with Wendell Carter off the court, Gafford is a better answer. Gafford's a better defender than Cornette every day of the week. Why do you feel the need to have more offense when that's not been the problem? It's clearly been defense. Put Gafford in. Put him ahead of him because Cornette's not even making threes. He was 1-of-4 tonight. They weren't guarding him. He missed several wide-open threes. And on the other end, Jaren Jackson Jr. absolutely abused him. He provides no rim defense. I know he's 7 feet tall, but he leads the league in flailing block attempts. He's not a great rim defender. If he's not hitting a three, he brings you nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Right.
He's not a good athlete.
A situational player in very limited situations. And same thing with Arch. And I'm with you. I totally appreciate a guy like Ryan being able to accomplish what he has as a college player and being an NBA player, right? And totally appreciate it. Think having him on the roster, as a energy person, maybe put him in here and there, like in the second quarter, just for a little energy change or, just depending on matchups. But in the fourth quarter, he should, in a game that matters, he should not be in there.
Absolutely.
But Yeah, I'm. You know, we haven't really even talked, you know, since the season started. But overall, the roster and depth, you know, we haven't even mentioned Otto Porter. You know, it looks like Denzel, who you and I both like a lot too, but it looks like he's pretty far down on the pecking order.
Well, he's just not physically ready. I mean, and I kind of went over this on another podcast, but it was pretty clear. I mean, he was kind of alternately brilliant and terrible in the practice I witnessed, and he's clearly got the offensive skills to play in the league, but he's not the best athlete, and if you're not 100%, and it makes sense. You had surgery, very significant surgery on your ankle last November. It's going to take a year, maybe a little longer. We just don't have the time to wait for him. So he's out of rotation now. It's his job to get into shape and bring something in January and February and March when, you know, we may need him if there's injuries or whatever. But,
right.
You know, I've been frustrated these first two games. You know, Otto Porter Jr. is a key player in his team. He's been terrible the first two games. 1-6 tonight. He was the only guy, -12, you know, in 21 minutes. He just did not play well. So I'm a little concerned about him. I mean, I think he's going to find his shot and bring it for us. But kind of interesting how LaVine had a terrible game one and incredible tonight. 13-23 from the field, 4 assists, 6 rebounds, 37 points, got to the rim at will. 7-10 from the free throw line, 10 free throw attempts. And, you know, Laurie was really good in game one, but Laurie was awful tonight. That was the worst game I've ever seen from him in a Bulls uniform. What say you?
Well, it's interesting. As things evolve tonight, Laurie was the third option on the floor, right? Which you know,
good
I always
point.
Thought of him, you know, when he came in as a rookie, that, well, he's going to be the number one option. You know, I saw his career really taken off, and you know he's going to be the, you know, the number one guy, right? The go-to scorer at crunch time.
Yes.
And it looks like he's evolving to the third option. I mean, I know people, the doubters, are going to say, "Fred, Tim, cool it, man. It's been two games. How do you how do you really know this about Coby White?" I just know it when I see it. And you heard the way they talked about him during the game, and when Stacey King was saying, "Get it, you know, get him the ball." Right? How many
rookies you say?
How many Bulls?
Yeah, 19-year-olds. You say about
years in their second regular season game? Do you have the announcers say, "Get him the ball"? When there's, you know,
Timmy
Zach LaVine and Laurie Markkanen on the floor.
He was brilliant in game one. He was 17-7 assists. It's like, what's the most shocking to me is I think he's been rock solid defensively. Like I pointed out, never falls for a pump fake, very smart, plays great one-on-one defense. I'm in love with the kid. Absolutely in love with him. I've never been more wrong on a player in my life. You can't say enough about him. It's almost to the point, too, like I'm wondering, I was driving after the game. I had to run to the store for the family, and on the way back, I was thinking, you know, is Coby White, should he be starting? Should he be the starter? I like Sato. Sato's a great addition. But, you know, I always kind of felt like Sato was a really rock-solid player to come off the bench. I don't think you can keep White out of the starting lineup if he keeps on producing like this. I mean, maybe you want to just keep him in this role and have him win Sixth Man of the Year. But at some level, don't you kind of feel like, man, it's kind of hard to keep a good man down. And do you want to keep him out of the starting lineup if he continues like in this rate?
Well, I think as long as he gets the minutes and as long as he's playing in the fourth quarter, you know,
doesn't
matter.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the opponent's defense having to deal with LaVine and White and Markkanen, right? And, you know, I think this is obviously what the Bulls have been hoping for, right? The other thing from the game tonight and what I've observed too is LaVine has kind of really elevated into a pretty elite player. And
no doubt.
You know, it's going to be hard to keep him off the All-Star team if he keeps this up. I think, you know, he still makes a few bad decisions. You know, he made that one try to thread the needle pass on a fast break. So, I mean, I'll give him a few mulligans, you know, throughout the course of the game just because he does so many good things. But I totally agree that the officials don't give him any benefit of the doubt, you know. And I mean, I even heard him, you could hear with the mic on the floor, he's saying a couple and ones. You know, and
yes.
I think he had a point on a couple of them.
Yeah.
You know,
agreed.
And I think he needs to be a little more respected by the officials. I think he's getting there and earning that. And he's putting up numbers like this. I think he'll be there.
I feel that way about Wendell Carter Jr. Wendell Carter Jr. had 4 fouls today that were absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous calls. The foul that he fouled out on, he went straight up. It's the rule of verticality. Morant runs into him at 500 miles an hour, hits, goes right in his chest, follow on Carter. Are you kidding me? Like, he had several of those calls. It's got to stop.
Draymond Green doesn't get called.
No.
That foul, right?
Are you kidding? Yeah, Draymond Green. That's a great point. Draymond Green gets away with murder on the court. And just because he's a rookie, you're not gonna give him a call? I mean, he's not even a rookie. He's a second-year player. I can understand as a rookie, hey, you can't be following this guy out. I mean, he had four of those foul calls were absolutely ridiculous. And I understand Wendell needs to be a little bit smarter not to pick up tic-tac calls. But I thought, like I said, four of them were a joke.
Right.
Why don't we get into a little bit, also another guy I can't fail to mention because he had 17 points in game one tonight. 21 minutes, 3-7 shooting, 7 points, 3 assists, and a board, and 1 rebound. But he was still, I thought, key at kind of turning things around is Thad Young. I love this addition. He's fantastic off the bench. He's such a smart player, such a good guy to have on the team. What do you think of Thad so far after two games?
Well, I love him because you need a guy that's been there, done that, you know, that has that veteran presence, both in the locker room as well as at certain points of the game, right, where he just makes the right decisions. And I think he's going to be such a good influence on these young guys. I mean, again, the roster is so young, right?
Yes.
And pun intended, I guess, with Thaddeus Young. But, I mean, young guys. But I thought that was a really shrewd offseason pickup by the Bulls. And you know, just to have someone that's been in the league as long as he had, you know, hasn't had a champion, you know, been in the finals or anything, but has played in, you know, key playoff games, has some, you know, definitely been part of some good teams, you know, playoff caliber teams. And so, yes, it just is a kind of a steady influence. And, you know, I like the intangibles that he brings as well, but he can still play as well.
Yes.
And, you know, he hit that key three. Yeah, just like his versatility and, you know, having him available as well.
I got to say, too, you know, looking at the numbers again, the Bulls lost that first game. They had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. That was, to me, almost inexcusable to lose that lead. I thought, you know, to come back there. But a lot of it, too, I also got to say, a lot of it, you know, and people deny this. There's a stat I saw where, you know, Charlotte shot. Devontae Graham was 6 of 7 off the bench from 3. And Marvin Williams is 5 of 7. Those two clowns are not going to ever shoot combined 11 of 14 from the three-point line again in their history
right. Together.
Maybe Marvin Williams will have a hot night where he'll do it. But combined 14 shots, those guys are going to hit 11 of them. It's not going to happen. It's a joke. That team shot incredibly well from three. Tonight, the Grizzlies shot 34.5%. So I think the first game it was they shot over 50%. I know definitely in the loss to Charlotte. So, yeah, the Bulls didn't defend the three-point line. No doubt about that. They did not contest well. I thought they were much better tonight, and I think it showed up in the stats. But also, you got to hand a little bit to Charlotte. I mean, Washington just killed them with those three guys alone.
Right. Well, and back to tonight's game, and again, it's very early, obviously, just two games into the season. They've started with two road games, which is probably not easy with some of these young guys. So just the poise that they've played with in two close games, and I'm talking about Kobe White in particular, you know, I'm encouraged. And it seemed like tonight's game was a game that the Bulls would have found a way to lose last year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so... You know, I think, you know, again, very encouraging. You know, I think a few tweaks with the rotation. I'm fine with bringing Kobe off the bench as a sixth man, but just at crunch time, you got to have, you know, have Zach, Kobe, and Laurie out there together. I think, you know, that's going to be tough for a lot of teams to defend. And, you know, right. It's going to be very rare where all three of them are having a bad night, right?
No doubt. Tim, now that we got you on and we kind of wrapped up a little bit of Bulls talk, anything else you want to add before we get? I had a couple questions for you about the West. Anything else you want to add about tonight or the start of the season so far?
Good on that. For the Bulls, though, the Raptors at home tomorrow, right? So that'll be a good. Let's see how they do on a back to back, and hopefully the fans will show out and with some excitement after that performance and Kobe White's first home game. I think is. is going to be worth the, you know, worth making some hype about, right?
Absolutely, I can't wait. Let's talk about the West really quick. I've been watching the Clippers a lot. They look fantastic, obviously. The Lakers, very interesting, that game one with the Lakers and Clippers, and then Clippers going to Golden State and win convincingly there. Are you of the mind that the Clippers are going to win the West and come out of the West, or do you feel that there's other teams that could challenge them, and if so, who?
Well, kind of like the Clippers are kind of like the Kobe White description, right? After two games, how can you be sure? Well, I know it when I see it, right? And just, you know, veteran coach, you know, they of course had to move a few key guys, you know, to clear the space to get Kawhi and Paul George. I think Jerry West is probably still losing a little sleep over having to give up Gallinari and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but it was the right move to make. So yeah, they look like they've got the package to make a run at it, because I think in the West, I don't know that their challengers, I think, all have some flaws, right? Either just inexperience or haven't gotten over the hump. You know, I don't buy into the Houston thing. I know Westbrook and Harden are incredible. I love Eric Gordon, but I still have never quite bought into Capella and PJ Tucker as starters on a championship team. Right? When I think of it in that way, I just don't buy into Houston being a team that can win at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to win a lot of games just because of what Harden and Westbrook can do alone. I mean, they could put you and I out there and Capella with those two guys, and we'd win some NBA games.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Utah, I think they still have to put some pieces together. I just don't know that they have the scoring punch and toughness to get over the hump against a Clipper team.
Yes.
I think Utah and Denver are going to be very, very good, and they're going to, challenge for, the first four seeds, I would say. The Lakers, gosh, I don't know. I'm still not buying in for some reason. You know, obviously, if LeBron's healthy and Anthony Davis is healthy, they're pretty compelling. But, I still have some doubts about some of the other roster spots. And, again, I know JaVale McGee did win a championship with Golden State. But, again, if he's a starter or a key guy on the championship team, I just don't know about that. I'm not buying into it, but I think it's pretty wide open, and we didn't even talk about Portland or the Spurs. I think are going to quietly do what they do. I think Dallas is maybe a little bit undervalued as well, especially if Porzingis is healthy. Doncic had a triple double tonight, and they won on the road in New Orleans.
No doubt about that. So I the championship, though, I mean, I think Philly's the best team in the East. I think they're clearly a cut above everyone else. I think they're going to run right through Milwaukee when they face in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think the Bulls are going to make the playoffs as a seventh seed. And I think it's going to be the Clippers in the Sixers. And I'm going to go with the Sixers winning it all. What say you for the title?
Well, I'm not as in on the Sixers as you are. I would go with Milwaukee in the East, and then the Clippers in the West, and then with the Clippers winning it. So that would be my, if I had to pick today, and what I've seen so far, and what I'm kind of projecting, that's how I'd have it. I'm still not, haven't fully jumped onto the Ben Simmons bandwagon, and I'm skeptical about how healthy Embiid can stay for a whole season. With today's pace and space game, big bodies like him, and I know he's getting in better and better shape, and I just don't know if the wear and tear on a body like Embiid is right for today's NBA.
I've been skeptical
about Zion. We talked about that all the way back in the pre-draft discussions, right? That I sure hope he's fine and has a long and successful career, but just the above the rim, pacing of today's game, a body like that, I just don't know, over 82 games in the playoffs is equipped to handle that wear and tear, unless they really, in his case, I think some load management is probably necessary.
Yeah, I'd say
even though he's only a rookie.
Yeah, with Zion, his game's definitely more dependent on athleticism than Embiid. Embiid is so skilled and so big that he could lose a little bit of that athleticism and still be effective, whereas Zion can't. Zion's like he's a physical freak, and if he loses gift of physical just dominance, it's going to significantly affect his game. I just think he's, Embiid, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think Embiid's got about two or three more years before he's going to break down. But, if he is he's healthy and they play him correct, there's so much talent on that team. And they're so big and they're so long that I think they're going to be a handle to deal with until the Bulls are ready to take them out, which will probably be next year.
they're compiling the Bulls now. I'm talking about. They're compiling a lot of very talented young players. So,
no doubt. I'm telling you, it's going to be a great year, Tim. I cannot wait to talk more basketball with you as this year goes on, brother.
No, I mean, from what we've seen, even the glimpses in summer league of Gafford and of Kobe. How can you not be excited about these guys and their athleticism? They seem to have great attitudes. I know scrutinize the Bulls front office, and I think they're really good at bringing in quality kids, right? Quality young players. I mean, look at Laurie, look at Carter Jr., look at these two guys, right? They seem to have their heads screwed on straight. They seem like hard workers, good attitudes, coachable.
Yeah.
I still have some hopes for Hutchinson, too. I know that's probably not a very popular thought, but, if he can get healthy, I think, adding him into the mix as another guy off the bench, maybe a second unit guy. I think there's some hope with him too.
I agree 100%. Tim, I got to hit the sack. It's late here in Chicago. Right. And hey, man, great talking to you again. We got to do it again soon. It's always great talking to the basketball historian Tim Gallagher.
Okay, Fred.
Take it easy, my man.
As well. Okay.
Talk to you again soon. Bye bye.